It's Parkside Today. I'm John Melke, Director of Strategic Communications here at UW Parkside, and it's a pleasure to be joined today by Chelsea Collier. Chelsea is founder of DigiCity, and last week she was on campus for the Wisconsin Idea Smart Future Summit, also spent time with members of the Racine community and also the Chancellor's Extended Cabinet. Chelsea, welcome again to UW Parkside, and thanks for taking some time to be on Parkside Today.
It's truly an honor and really a great pleasure. So thanks so much for hosting me.
So you've traveled around the world learning about and talking to people about smart cities. What are some of the common themes, common elements of that you can find whether you're in Europe or Asia or the United States when it comes to talking about smart cities?
Yeah, I really appreciate that question because I think it's easy to talk about our differences and the things that divide us. In smart cities, there are definitely those and a wide variety of opinions on all sorts of topics. But at the end of the day, no matter if you're working for government, if you're working for industry, if you're a student, if you're in a university, it's about everybody leaning in and figuring out how can we create a more connected community. How can we improve our experience in our city, on our campus, in the world? How can we as humans use technology to enable what's possible? So those are the things that connect us in this very rapidly evolving world that is now termed smart city. And we talked a little bit during the summit about that term smart city. While it's the one that everybody's kind of rallied around and chosen, even the term is evolving as quickly as everything else.
Right.
So we talk about smart communities and smart cultures that came out of some of our discussion. And it's really about embracing change and asking smart questions, coming together as community members with very different interests, backgrounds, and perspectives, and really defining what community and culture and cities mean in the modern age.
Mm-hmm. And what do you find in various conversations about some common challenges when someone says, oh, we're going to move toward being a smart city or a smart region or a smart community? I have to believe there are common challenges for each of those initiatives.
Right. The challenge is really around change. Some people call this era that we're in the fourth industrial revolution. And I know for a town or multiple towns that were really heavily into manufacturing, you know, not so long ago, an industrial revolution means something very, very different than communities who weren't a part of that. So think about what the first industrial revolution brought, you know, the steam engine and what a catalytic invention that was. Fast forward to where we are now, we're in that era of rapid change, and change is happening at such an accelerated pace that everyone's just a little uncomfortable. So where there is uncomfort or discomfort, there is an opportunity. And that to me is what smart cities or smart communities or smart cultures, that's what it's all about. Mm-hmm. But change isn't easy. And I think people can easily get comfortable in whatever sector they're in. Again, whether you're working for a corporation or you have your own small business or you're an academic expert in an era or you are working within city government, it's easy to think that things have been a certain way and that's the way they will always be. That is no longer the case, and you don't have to live in a big city in order for that to be true. It is true for every municipality in every community, and that's really kind of a cool thing, is that we're all in it together, and we're all kind of facing these challenges together, and if we kind of lean in again with the hope of what's possible, then we can co-create what those solutions are. As long as we're open and flexible and talking about the things that make us uncomfortable and the things that make us excited.
Mm-hmm. And how does Chelsea Collier become founder of DigiCity?
talk about change. The story behind that is to me kind of interesting. You know, when I first came out of the university, my first job out of college was at an advertising agency. Mm-hmm. So that was quite a while ago. And if you would have told me then, you know, right out of school that I would be here now, I probably would have a really good laugh. Mm-hmm. But my background is really varied. I started off in advertising, eventually owned my own advertising firm, and then decided advertising wasn't really important to me, but I really cared about communication. So I joined a nonprofit. And after the nonprofit, I said, ooh, I wonder if I could do this within government. So I joined state agency in economic development that eventually transitioned into the governor's office for the state of Texas. I live in Austin, Texas. Mm-hmm. After that, I went back to school, to graduate school, founded an entrepreneurs conference, started working for a tech company. And after all of that, said, gosh, I just feel like I want to squash all of this experience into one thing. So I founded my own consulting firm in 2010. And the rest, I stumbled across literally. In 2016, I stumbled across literally looking through a LinkedIn feed, what's called the Eisenhower Fellowship. And so I applied for the fellowship. And one of the questions on that application was, if you could study anything for a period of a year and travel around the world to study that, what would that be? Mm. My answer to that was smart cities. And really, it was because I couldn't choose between communication and civic engagement, technology, innovation, public policy, entrepreneurship, social impact, all these areas that I really enjoy and care about. Smart cities is the umbrella that brings all of those things together. Mm-hmm. So through the lens of smart cities, I'm able to study all of these things. Thankfully, I received the fellowship. So I'm getting to the answer to your question, I promise, but the background is...
I think the answer, the description of how you move through to where you are now is really, it's an interesting journey for sure.
It is a journey. That is a perfect word for it. So as part of my fellowship, most people do something a little more academic, like a white paper or use cases, a series of lectures, something more kind of paper-based and tangible. And the area of smart cities is evolving so quickly, not just in the U.S., but around the world, mm-hmm. that I thought I have to have some sort of mechanism that I can update in real time and also that's easy to share. So my logical answer to that was a blog. So I created a blog called mm-hmm. DigiCity, and the URL was available. It was not $10,000. It was $7.99. So created a Squarespace account and was learning. I was able to write kind of my experience to mm-hmm. share what I was learning. I was able to write kind of my experience, asking more questions than having answers at the time. I think that's still true today. And I was also able to reach out to people and share some of the thought leaders in very specific verticals and then talk about how all of those different areas combine to create smarter, more connected communities.
Mm-hmm. So when you're applying for the fellowship and you see smart cities as kind of the umbrella for these different areas of which you have interest, how much did you know about smart cities at that time? Or was it something that as you're investigating and looking at it that you discover that?
I discovered it. I knew hardly anything. And really, I have to thank online search engines like Google for helping me craft the application. But I wasn't alone, and I'm still not alone. I mean, we are all co-creating this area. No one has the answers. And that certainly is a challenge because I think we're used to kind of seeking out the subject matter experts and having them kind of pave the path. Mm. That's not the way that all of this is evolving. It's a collection of people with very specific subject matter expertise, but no one entity can do it alone. Mm-hmm. A smart city is not the responsibility of city government. It's not the responsibility of a private sector or a corporation. It's not the responsibility of a university. It's not the responsibility of a nonprofit. It's all of those groups mm-hmm. coming together and mm-hmm. framing the questions and some of the answers that are very specific to that very specific community. There's no one size fits all.
Mm-hmm. Last week when you were here for the Wisconsin Idea Smart Future Summit and you told close to 200 attendees at the summit about the fact that as you're traveling the world and you're seeing use China as an example, that China is, I think you said it, like a decade ahead of where mm-hmm. we are in the United States. And I'm curious as to why, as to why they are ahead of us. What's allowed them to, or how have they moved forward more quickly with, mm-hmm. with Smart City Initiative?
Yeah. There's a lot of different answers to that question, but I think I can summarize it in a, I'll kind of cheat and summarize it in one, is that China's approach to smart cities is a top-down approach. Their version of the federal government, which is called the central government, has what's called five-year plans. They have a five-year plan around innovation, and smart cities is a part of that plan. So there are all the different government ministries who have pieces and pieces of that plan and roles to play within that ecosystem. But ultimately, it is their version of our federal government that says, these are the areas that are important. Here's where we're concentrating. Here's the roadmap and here's the funding. Mm-hmm. And then it's a matter of implementing. Mm-hmm. In the U.S., turn that model 100% upside down. Mm-hmm. So there really isn't a federal agency. There isn't leadership from the federal branch, and I'm not saying that as a criticism. I'm just saying that as a reality. Mm-hmm. What has happened, and what is inherently American, and I think really cool, is that it's much more of a democratized process where the local municipalities, the local community leaders, are then taking it upon themselves to say, "Okay, we want to participate in this. How are we going to be a smarter, more digitally forward community?" Mm-hmm. What does it mean for our community? What do we have to offer? What do we need? How can we lead? And what are the areas where we really need to learn? And that process is slower, and you have to be creative with the funding mechanisms. There's all sorts of different ways to fund smart cities. It mm-hmm. doesn't come from one central checkbook. Sometimes it doesn't come from a checkbook at all, and it comes from cost savings. When you implement technology, you can save energy, for example. Mm-hmm. Right. Implementing certain technologies, you can measure and catalyze energy savings. So all many, many, many different examples of what certain cities are doing around certain issues, how they're paying for it, how they're approaching it, how they're defining it. It's all different. And with that complexity, it's slower, but we're catching up quickly. Mm-hmm. There are things that I think the federal level can lead, and that's mostly on the policy side, providing just some guidance to cities around these are the things you need to look out for. We talked a lot today last week around 5G mm-hmm. and the importance of laying the framework for that communications infrastructure. That's a place where the federal agencies can lead because it's a national imperative.
Right. And that during the discussion with leadership here on campus, and I got the impression that, you know, some perspectives were, well, it's a good thing that the federal government or the state government is not involved in this. And maybe another perspective of, well, that's interesting that they're not involved. Looking to the future, do you see a point where if the initiatives from the city level continue to grow, where the state government or the federal government looks at it and goes, we have to get involved in this mm-hmm. because of what it means to the people living in an area that they basically, it would seem, have no choice
right.
Unless they want to get involved because there's some way to possibly increase revenue or do something for the state or the federal government.
There are lots of different roles depending on the situation. So where there's an opportunity to streamline and roll technology out in a way that's more efficient and of course equitable, then I think that's a role for a higher level organization, whether that's a state level or a federal level. It's almost like the efficiency of having guidelines as opposed to the inefficiency of a patchwork approach. Mm. And I've talked with a lot of the industry leaders in this area, and that can be a startup with 1.5 people. You know, somebody's yeah. kind of working part-time and somebody's quit their day job, or it can be a global corporation. And all of the folks in the industry side say the U.S. is such a huge market. It's inefficient for us to try to approach every single community where there are 20,000 cities in the United States. But all these cities need certain technologies, so how can we reach them? And that's when streamlining the regulatory environment, the policy landscape, to make it easier to create those connections between public and private sector and the university sector. You know, the university has such an important role to play in all of this.
Mm-hmm. At the, and kind of hate to keep referring back to the summit, but that was a an important part
Let's
of the reason
it.
That
you were here. It was a super cool gathering, right?
It was an really interesting amazing. Gathering, and you played lead off, and appreciate the work you did there. When you asked the question to the group, how many people, and I forget exactly how you phrased the question, but basically how many people know what a smart city is, and out of 200 or so, two or three people raised their hand. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of common? Have you? I'm assuming you've asked that question maybe before to other groups. Is that similar to reaction that you get at other places?
Absolutely. It is the most common element in this smart cities journey. And I spend a lot of time at industry conferences and conferences dedicated to smart cities. And even in that environment where all of the subject matter is focused on smart cities, people are still insecure about the definition. Mm-hmm. And I think that's okay. I mm-hmm. think it's cool because, again, we can all shape what that definition is. And the fact that the lines have not all been filled in, or the picture has not all been filled in, mm-hmm. to me beckons opportunity and creativity. There's room in there for everyone. But at the same time, there are certain elements that are common to all the definitions, depending on how you approach it.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the principal benefits of a smart city from your perspective?
Yeah, to me, there's three principal benefits. The first one is around increasing operational efficiency. And those are a bunch of fancy words that basically mean saving time and money. So mm-hmm. if you can deploy technology to save a city time and money, that ultimately benefits the community, it benefits taxpayers. And there's all sorts of ways to do that really well. The second thing is enhancing quality of life. So saving money within City Hall is one thing, but how it affects people's lives. Can they access transportation more easily? Can they access healthcare more easily? Education, access of any kind. Can they access technology more easily? Is their experience as a resident or a visitor of a community enhanced? That's the second benefit to smart city technology. And the third is promoting prosperity. So this part, I think, is really pretty important because it involves the business sector. And if you don't involve industry, then it doesn't have the same sort of stickiness. Mm-hmm. If you're implementing technology that benefits your businesses on Main Street and makes it easier to recruit large employers to come to your area, then you have smart city technology that then works up to those other benefits where you're increasing the quality of life for your residents because you're offering more opportunity, mm-hmm. And you're saving the city money and increasing the operational efficiencies because you're running a more efficient city. So it all works together in tandem.
You talked a little bit about how you went from a university student to founder of DigiCity. And you said the other day that you got to the top of some mountains, referring to career goals, and looked around and went, "Oops, not the right mountain."
That's right.
And that's not necessarily a bad thing, is it?
At the time, it was really confusing because I was really looking for the answer of what I was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. You know, I had all of these goals and aspirations, and I was just on the way to achieve those things. But then when I kind of checked the boxes of what I wanted to accomplish, I didn't have the sense of satisfaction that I had expected. And I really wanted a clear-cut path where I could just kind of go to each stop along the journey and then end up in this magical place. And that's not the way it worked for me. So I had to keep going on the path. I had to keep climbing the mountain. And, you know, I'd get to the top of one mountain and be like, "Oh, look at that mountain over there." So I'd run down
mountains.
And run up the next one. And that process was exhausting. But now I understand the purpose of all of it is because I've worked at a nonprofit and I understand the pain of people who are living with no resources, and mm-hmm. how important those community advocates are on the front lines of the community. I've worked in state government. I understand what it's like to live in bureaucracies that you wish weren't there, but they are. And you have to meet all of your residents' needs, not just a select few. And I understand what it means to build a small business. I understand what it means to be in a startup and be a part of that community. So all of these different experiences, while, you know, it was kind of challenging while you're in it, looking back on it, I'm so grateful just for the variety of experience.
Mm-hmm. As a female in a world that maybe working on the tech side of things, mm-hmm. where there's different initiatives to get more females involved in the tech side, what have been some of the challenges as you've continued your career, advanced your career from a female perspective, and also some of the opportunities?
The things that, if I could go back and kind of sit down with my 18, 19, 20-year-old self. The advice that I would give that young lady is don't be afraid to speak up. It's intimidating when you're the only female in the room and there's 19 other people and they don't share a gender with you. They have more experience than you do. They approach situations differently than you do. And I think what women bring to this kind of creative change-infused world is so critical and needed. I still hesitate because I don't want to be too bold or say too much or take up too much space in the conversation. And all of that is just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's really important to believe in yourself, to really do the work to understand who you are, what gifts you have, and that people need you to be in the room and they need you to express those gifts and share them. Mm-hmm. And that can be very intimidating. You know, it's hard to be different, but I think some of that is starting to change. I work with a lot of younger women who are up and coming, and they don't have the same kind of level of baggage that I did. Mm-hmm. I won't speak for my generation, but certainly for me, where they just see possibility. Mm-hmm. And there's a fearlessness that I really love and I encourage. And at the same time, it's also really important to listen. It's not just about being first and being the boldest and taking up the most room, but not letting that hamper you when you have something to contribute.
Did you have to work harder?
I did. I had to work a lot harder. And I had to learn how to present myself in a way that invited other people to invite me into the room. What does this conversation, kind of having the emotional intelligence of what does this conversation need that it doesn't have, and how can I provide that? A lot of times it's just listening to people. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of chatter, a lot of energy, whether, you know, we're in person with each other or online, there's a lot of noise and a lot of buzz. And sometimes the greatest thing you can do is listen. Mm-hmm. And my first boss had a term, he called it the zinger. And he's like, Chelsea, if you can get one zinger in a corporate board meeting, you've done your job, and make sure you are smart in how you approach it and what is the thing that nobody has said that needs to be said, and do it with grace. So I think it's a learned skill, but don't be afraid to try. I live a philosophy that is not structured. You know, I don't live life with a lot of rules. I like things that are flexible, ever changing, ever evolving. But I do have three kind of rules for my life. Number one is show up. And that means not letting fear get in the way. It's okay if you're the only female in the room. Yeah. It's okay if you don't know what you're talking about in a room full of subject matter experts. That happens to me all the time in smart cities, and in this area where, you know, people are so smart and doing such important research, but you still have to show up and follow your heart and don't be afraid to be in a room that you think you don't belong in. And number two is work hard. Mm-hmm. You know, I love working hard. I don't mind working harder than everyone else. I find the joy in that. because I love what I do, and yeah. I always have. Even, you know, if it hasn't exactly been the right industry fit, you just work harder until you find the fit, and you just keep going. And the third part of it, probably the most important, is always tell the truth, no mm-hmm. matter what. Nobody is served if we're not being honest with each other.
Right.
And that doesn't mean you have to, you know, yell liar, liar, pants on fire. there's ways to do that with integrity, but being honest with yourself and with those around you, I think is pretty critical.
Mm-hmm. As you travel around the world, as a woman, do you feel treated differently in different parts of the world?
That is a great question. I don't know if I notice it so much anymore. Mm-hmm. That may be a factor of, you know, I have a couple years on me, and it may be a factor of I'm exploring the world in a different way, and it may be a factor of my curiosity outweighs my intimidation. Mm. So I think my answer to that maybe a decade or two ago would be different. It certainly is true. There are all sorts of cultural norms, deep-seated traditions. Sometimes I feel really honored that I'm in a different community that has a different gender relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, I was recently in Stockholm, Sweden, and what a cool city. And I saw as many men walking around pushing baby strollers as I did women.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of it, too, is that we're just in this age where anything is possible. And yes, those cultural norms and stereotypes still exist. There are still barriers. There are still glass ceilings, all of that. But show up, work hard, and tell the truth. Just be better.
Right.
Work harder. Invite help. And there's so much help available. There's so much support for women. And, you know, the world is perfect and to do. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not trying to say, you know, the world is perfect and we're there. We are not there by any stretch of the imagination. But I see it evolving in a very positive way.
So after you leave the WIPZ studios here, and we're, you know, as the show always goes faster than you think it's going to
right.
go. I look over and go, wow, we've only got a few minutes left.
Oh,
but where does Chelsea Collier go from here?
Yeah, from here I go back home to Austin, Texas,
okay.
Where I will be for just a few days. And then I head to Columbus, Ohio, and then I head to Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
In October, I'm really excited, where I start another fellowship, the next leg of my journey, where I'll be in five European cities over 4 days on a German Marshall Memorial Fellowship studying smart cities. So I'll be able to visit with all of those community leaders and really understand Europe's approach to smart cities and the transatlantic partnership. You know, we live in a global world, and I think it's more important to embrace differences with those ideas.
Right.
Local communities with those ideas.
Right. Maybe not a fair question, but if it isn't, you can say, John, not
I'll
a fair question.
Yeah.
if we were having this conversation a year from now and we were talking about smart cities, what do you think we'd be talking about? What would be the top theme?
That is such a great question.
Wow, that's two of them during
yeah.
the show. Holy
well
cow.
Done. You guys are smart.
Don't know about that.
I hope that we will have found some real solutions around bridging the digital divide and some very specific case studies about how to leverage connected technology to solve our social challenges. I think there's great opportunity to do that. A lot of people are paying attention to that. You know, I pay attention to the U.S. Council of Mayors, and that is always a top topic. And it is one of the most frequent questions that I get when I'm traveling and talking about smart cities is, how can we leverage technology to help us improve the community for all of our residents
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
and not just a select few? So I hope that we will have a lot more examples of communities who are figuring that out. And, you know, there is no end goal with smart cities. It is a continuous evolution. It's a mindset.
Mm-hmm.
There's no end destination. So, yeah, we'll see a year from now. That's fun to think about.
Yeah. Wrap up question. during your time here at Parkside and meeting with different groups a couple times, few times, I heard you say the gathering of people, the mixture of people was really unique. Why was it unique?
There are very few representatives around the board, different representatives around the board. And by representatives, I mean there's city leadership, there's county leadership, there's university leadership, some of the technical college leadership, there's industry, there's small business represented. There are very few cities who know how to create that kind of community. And you see it when there's a challenge, the community comes together, or when there's some sort of crisis. But from what I've witnessed here, you all have been working collaboratively for a long period of time. You have that muscle memory where you can connect with each other as people, mm-hmm. and perhaps right, people right. with differences and right. different agendas, and that's perfectly okay. But I see Chancellor Ford says, what if we could, I mean, I must have heard her say that 20 different times in the span of a day and a half. That's incredibly inspiring. Right. So I just encourage you all, number one, to celebrate what you've already done, which has come together as a community. Mm-hmm. And number two, just to keep going. There's, you know, these are not easy times. There's no kind of check the box, this is the right answer. It's whatever you all define it as. And I just feel really lucky to have been a small part of it for a couple of days. And I hope to have the opportunity to stay involved and champion what you're doing on a global stage.
Great. Well, we've been very lucky to have you here. I'm sure that the Smart Cities conversation in southeastern Wisconsin will continue. Maybe you'll be back sometime soon if we can pry you away from Europe and Manchester, England.
I think you might be going there. Yeah.
And Chelsea Collier, founder of DigiCity, thank you very much for taking time to be on Parkside today.
Great. Thanks so much for having me.